But nobody asked you a question.
I know, I'm like,
I was just
no
reading it out loud.
Are you on Facebook?
I was just then.
Wow, we're having business here.
Were we? Were we having business?
We. This is serious business.
Yeah, but Katie was talking about Lord only knows what, and you were like setting up the computer, and I was killing time until we're ready to go. Wow. I don't feel like that was business.
You know, we just expect a level of you're just always ready. You know,
I am always ready.
You know, well, not if you're on Facebook.
It's go time.
Yes,
Patrick, I was born ready.
Are you ready?
Ready. Ready as can be.
Ready, Freddy.
All right. Welcome to the Beyond Sunday podcast, where we are exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. This is Patrick Nazaroff, and with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How you doing, Patrick?
Good. How are you doing? And Katie Phillips.
Hello. I'm on the wrong side of the table. I just realized this.
Yeah, are you going to be okay?
I don't know.
We're in different seats.
We're in different seats.
Katie's whole worldview has shifted, and she doesn't like it.
Uh-huh. I'm like, ooh. Yeah.
She suddenly sees
I see the right other side of our Patrick faces. And the left side of Pastor David.
Not our best sides.
As a staff, confused. We do like assigned seats.
We do.
We sit in assigned seats in our staff meetings. And yes, these are informally assigned seats,
yeah.
But we just always sit in the same place.
Yep.
I sit in the same place at worship every week.
Well,
Just
saying, I like assigned seats. I know where I need to go.
Yikes.
I tried to make a joke with the kids a couple weeks ago in the children's sermon about not having to choose my clothes when I come to worship because I wear the robe.
Right.
They didn't get it. They're like, what? What are you talking about? Like, yeah, that's about right. Par for the course.
Yeah, sounds about good.
What are we talking about today, Patrick?
All right. Well, we actually are going to do a two-part podcast.
Double-decker.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking a lot about
church. Are we going to have dramatic to be continued music at the end?
I can see what I can do about
that.
Yeah. But we are going to be talking about church. The actual building, place of worship. We'll be talking about church bodies, all those things at once.
All right.
All right, so today we're going to take a further look at why people don't come to church.
Okay.
And how the church can and should respond to that.
All right.
Or should not.
Okay.
Maybe,
sure.
Maybe you'll say, we're good. The problem is on you.
It's your fault.
Yes. It's not us. It's you. Yeah.
The classic line. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. But first, I have an article.
Excellent.
It is Girl Scout cookie season.
Woo.
Yeah.
Thin Mints for life.
Thin Mints. Yeah. Are you a Thin Mint? Katie, what's your preferred?
Oh, man.
Girl
I'm a Thin
Scout
Mint.
Cookie?
I'm not going to tell you how many boxes I bought already.
Frozen Thin Mints, and then you break it up over top of vanilla ice cream. Oh, man.
How did you know that?
Because that's my jam.
No, that's my jam.
No, that's...
Oh, whatever. No, that's so
did y'all
you
just
do.
Become
you take,
best friends?
Right? I know. That's exactly what you do. Put it in a Ziploc bag.
What's that
bag.
Movie? Is
it that's Step Brothers. Brothers. Yeah.
You crunch it up.
We're
going to
have so much
fun
for activities.
So good.
Yeah. Well, Girl Scouts around the world, or at least in the United States, are selling...
Do they sell cookies outside of the United States?
I don't know. Katie, you're a Girl Scout mom.
I am. I don't know.
In the United States, though, so that doesn't.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know.
Report back to us.
Yeah,
okay.
Find out.
I'll report back.
But this is Girl Scout cookie season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all of us are Thin Mint people.
You have to get your Girl Scout cookie license.
I'm also a Girl Scout cookie.
I thought you liked peanut butter patties.
No, that's my wife likes those.
Oh.
I like the Caramel Delights as well.
Oh, yes. That's
solid
a
choice.
One.
Yeah. Are the Caramel Delights the one that are sometimes called Samoas?
Yep.
Yes. Okay.
I think here in the South, they're Caramel Delights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm weird, but I really like the shortbread cookies, too.
No.
Oh, those are so good.
No. The lemonades are fabulous.
The lemonades are tasty, though I liked them better when they used to be the sandwich.
Mm.
And had the lemon cream in the sandwich.
Mm.
Okay. That was my preference.
Well, anyway, this is from a year ago. And for future Girl Scout
wait,
leaders,
so our whole topic isn't just us talking about our favorite Girl Scouts.
We liked this. Go back. So,
all right. And this is in San Diego from a year ago.
Okay.
But a Girl Scout sold 300 boxes in 6 hours outside of a marijuana dispensary.
Shocking.
Yeah. This is an effective marketing strategy.
I guess so.
I cannot fault her capitalistic spirit.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea, right? You know, here's a tweet. She's one smart cookie. You know, there we go. So,
zing.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Katie?
300 boxes in
6 hours.
In 6 hours?
Huh.
That's pretty good.
So 100, that's 50 bucks an hour, approximately.
Yeah.
So how much do Girl Scout cookies sell for?
This year or last year? Because this
let's
is
just,
year
let's just go with this year.
This year, five bucks a box.
$5 a box. So if you're selling 50 boxes an hour, how much is that?
$250 an hour.
$250 in sales.
That's not bad.
one Girl Scout for.
I don't make $250 in sales in an hour.
I guess she doesn't make any of that.
No, she does not. She makes money for her
She makes it in self-confidence and camp something or other, right? I don't know. There's
there's camp money.
Yeah,
like
see?
You,
yeah.
you earn mm-hmm. cookie dough. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
Cookie dough. Cookie, like cookie yeah. cash. Yeah.
Ugh.
No, it's cute.
The puns just keep on coming, and they're not getting better.
No. So, Katie, we don't have any marijuana dispensaries here in Texas.
That's correct.
Because they'd be against the law.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Texas. Or at least, you know, yeah. But do you think, would you have your Girl Scouts from your troop, do you think that this could be something that they would do if this was legal here in Texas?
I don't know. I don't.
What's a legal... Like, what's something that you can do legally that you get really hungry afterwards? Like, working out.
Would yes, you,
like,
you could.
If you could, like, go hang out in front of the gym.
Yeah, yeah. That's a horrible idea.
I think that's great marketing. Be like, hey, you just worked out. Buy a box of Girls. You earned this.
Sure.
You worked hard. Come buy a couple boxes.
You earned. Yeah, you worked off these future Girl Scouts.
That's right.
Yeah. Reward future you.
Reward future. Future you deserves this.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they set up outside of... grocery stores.
Sure.
I mean, yeah. How many times do you go to the grocery store hungry?
Yeah, all too often.
Right. I guess that's an interesting place for me because, like, you're in there already buying.
No. You get them on the way in, so then you go, oh, I don't need to buy the other junk I was
but
planning
I don't
on buying.
I don't go into the grocery store to buy anything like Girl Scout cookies. Like, that is not the purpose that I go to.
You're not a cookie purchaser?
No.
Yeah.
No. If I want a cookie, like, if I'm going to go get a cookie, I'm going to get, like, real... like chocolate chip cookies or, you know, something chewy and delicious like that. Or I get...
They sell those
Girl Scout cookies when you walk in.
They're not the same. Yeah, I don't know those Girl Scouts. I like to support people that I know.
Okay.
My mom raised me not to buy candy from strangers, so, you know.
Well, next time you find yourself in a marijuana dispensary in San Diego, perhaps...
We're gonna have to have some different conversations if that's happened. But.
What would be the equivalent of that here in Texas? A bar?
Yeah. Closing time at a bar. Take your girls out
at 2 in the morning.
2 in the morning.
Downtown here.
Right.
We've got cookies.
Oh, no.
What could possibly go wrong?
I think it's...
You know what else, though? That's interesting because you have to be an approved cookie booth place.
Now, I believe...
You can't just, like, walk down the street and sell cookies.
In the article I'm reading, she did fudge rolls. She was selling on the sidewalk. She had a little wagon... On
okay.
the sidewalk.
Yeah, so you can do a walkabout with your wagon.
So she just happened to be walking about in front of
and
this.
She's just walking back and forth in front of this marijuana dispensary.
Gotcha. Interesting.
You know what? Capitalism at its best, man. Yeah. You find a captive audience and take advantage of it. That's what made America.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There we are. Girl Scout cookies. Rebuilding America one thin mint at a time.
There we go. All right, well, let's move on. We're going to talk today about church, and we're going to talk a little bit about why do people stop coming to church or why they don't come to church at all.
Sure.
And it's probably no big secret, whether you're inside the church or outside the church, that church attendance in America is down. It is on the decline and probably relatively quickly on the decline.
And this would be across the board, across denominations, Catholic, Protestant, non-denominational. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, even churches that we would describe as quote-unquote mega churches are seeing a decline. They're just seeing that decline in a slightly different pattern and time frame than other churches have.
Yeah, kind of the last holdouts, more of the southern evangelical churches were the last ones that remained steady, and now they're seeing themselves on a decline as well. So we're all on the decline, whether you're conservative, liberal, everywhere in between. It's getting tough for the church. And so we want to take a look at why that is happening and is there any way that the church can do a better job of responding to that? And so what do we think? What are some of the major reasons? And we can maybe just brainstorm here a few reasons, throw them out there, and we'll come back and kind of address these things more directly.
One that I hear all the time from people who would otherwise be coming to church is we're too busy.
Sure.
We've got too much stuff going on. We've probably heard this in our own lives. Right? Sundays are one day as a family where we don't have a sports thing or we don't have a job. Sundays are one day as a family, and why would we want to spend that at church? It's the undertone of that comment, right?
Right.
Like, that's the part that doesn't get said, but that's the implication. If that's what we're saying.
Yep.
Well, I think part of that too is we're also saying Sunday mornings used to be culturally sacred.
Sure.
In fact, places weren't even open.
Right.
There were no sports on Sunday mornings, and now that is not the case. Some of our kids here in the South, we'll have soccer tournaments, baseball tournaments on Sunday mornings because they're free and it's an easy place to do that. So, so people
are busy. Same thing used to be true of Wednesday nights in a lot of places where, you know, school districts just wouldn't schedule anything because everybody knew you went to church for Bible study or whatever on Wednesday nights.
Yeah.
Now that's a little further back than even Sunday mornings, but that's, yeah, we're seeing that across.
All right. So they're busy. What other things do we have?
Hypocrisy. People feel like people who go to church, most Christians are hypocrites.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're like, yep, don't want to be a part of that.
Well, they're not wrong.
Right.
So, you know, it's hard to argue against that one. They're very correct. Mm-hmm. I think if they were to point the microscope at themselves, they'll see we ourselves are also hypocrites.
Right.
You know, but they're certainly correct that the church is full of hypocrites and sometimes blatant hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm.
So...
yeah, I think there's also a sense that, you know, once upon a time, we would go to church to fulfill cultural and social needs. You know, this is a place where we found community, and there's a lot more opportunity to connect with community in a meaningful way outside of church. Mm-hmm. And so that need for church has kind of been filled by other other things have stepped into that gap. And along the same lines as that, you know, not only is there a social need, but you know, there was a time where in a lot of places that was the only option.
Right.
Like, I mean, I think I've told this story on the podcast before of a woman in my last congregation who would talk about when she was a youth in kind of rural South Carolina, if you wanted to have like a big outing for a dinner, you went to church and you had a potluck because there weren't restaurants on every corner. Yeah. There wasn't a movie theater down the street. That's just where you went.
Yeah. If you wanted to meet new people, you go to church. If you wanted to get your kids plugged in to meet friends, church. Those are the places you go, and those are just no longer we're not the only game in town,
right?
And and so there's other places that are maybe doing that even better than the church does it. You know, so if you want to meet people, this is no longer the place to come. And so I think also along with you know, another reason that people have for not coming to church anymore, so we had busy, hypocrisy, community, and that is it's boring.
Yeah, sure.
That they just say, it's just not that exciting to be at church. And why would I want to spend an hour listening to somebody drone on and on and then ask me for my money? And then, like, that's a statement that I hear.
Right, sure.
A criticism of our church.
Yeah.
That it's just too boring.
Yeah.
So, first I have some data here.
Okay.
So, we have a rise of people that are saying they love Jesus, but not the church.
Okay.
So this is a new, not necessarily new, but a greater rise of people that are not necessarily leaving faith as they leave church. So they can still be, they still consider themselves faithful Christians, but they're still not engaged on their local congregation in any way. And do you want to guess the largest group, you know, the largest social group that's doing that?
Larger social group that is liking Jesus more and
that likes Jesus,
leaving Jesus, leaving
the church. I'm
going to say 20s to 35s.
That is incorrect.
Oh, okay.
Katie, do you have a guess?
Am I even
you
like
just want an age range?
Well, I mean, yeah. If you want to say a demographic here, what is it? Millennials, Gen Xers, Boomers, Elders.
I'm going to go with Gen Xers.
Actually, it's the baby boomers.
Really?
Boomers. Yes. They are the group that is liking Jesus but not liking the church. Millennials are pretty low, probably because they don't like Jesus. But they're just not having faith at all. Like they're, as a group, faith is on the decline, so there's no reason. There's no conflict there for them. And elders is also the absolutely lowest. So people born before like 1944 are the lowest because they love Jesus. They love the church. They're here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the baby boomers and Gen Xers are probably the two largest groups that still like Jesus but are just not interested in the group.
Yeah.
Combined, they make 80% of all these people that are leaving the church.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot,
yeah. Hmm. So, and so I think that's an interesting thing, like this idea of like, so it's not even just like our young people are leaving the church and hopefully they'll come back. I mean, historically, the church has had this idea of like, well, about the time they get their driver's license, they'll leave, but then they'll come back when they get their marriage license.
Right.
Okay.
Or when they have a baby.
Or they have a kid. Yeah.
Those are the things that maybe that'll draw them back. But now, socially, people are having babies later and getting married later. So if you leave church when you're 16 and you're married at 30, that's a large time that you've established
it's
your identity.
Half your life at that point,
yeah, without the context of a local church. Mm-hmm. Like, you've established, you know how to do life without the context of church.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you, historically, if you were leaving at 16 and coming, getting married at 22, that's only 6 years.
Right.
So you have, you still have a lot of root
You're
within the church.
You're not that far removed.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So I think maybe we've been counting on that with past generations, the church historically has, that, yeah, they'll leave, but they'll still come back.
Yeah.
We got them on the back end. We've right. done our work. They'll be back. And now less and less are coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And for a variety of reasons, mm-hmm. some of which we've identified.
Yeah.
So what can we do? How can we address some of these issues? Are there things that the church is just guilty of? Or is this like, we're up against a culture that's too big and too powerful for us to even go against?
Yeah.
Or does the church itself play a role in mm-hmm. these things?
Let's talk about hypocrisy first.
Sure.
You know, what do you all think about how do we as congregations address the reality that there's hypocrisy within our walls, and how do we address that perception with people mm-hmm. outside of the church?
I think the first step is to admit that, yes, that is in fact true.
Yeah.
Like, owning. We are not, yes, we have to own that first.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to say it, like, to not go out into the world and make people feel that we're better than they are, because mm-hmm. we are a church body and we go to church and, mm-hmm. you know, but in the same time you turn around and you see that exact same person doing something.
Sure.
You know, that.
Yeah. So more humility when you're going out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think we need to do a better job of calling ourselves out. So,
mm-hmm.
so that doesn't mean necessarily within our own local church body, but the church needs to do a better job of calling out Christianity that's not representing itself well in
mm-hmm.
public.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes our culture sees, like, the church, the people the church likes to go after are the non-Christians,
mm-hmm.
those that are not engaged or involved mm-hmm. in church. Those are the people the church likes to call out for their mm-hmm. sin, their cultural mm-hmm. place,
whatever it
might be. And I'm not even saying that the church is wrong to do that, but I think what's more wrong is to do that and ignore the sins
right.
and faults of within our own tribal ranks.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that should be probably the most forefront, that we need to be more willing to look at one another in the body of Christ and say, we are not living up to this standard,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
and more willing to say those things.
That's what we talked about a little bit with an episode a couple of weeks back when we were
yeah.
talking about church too, right? That we
yeah,
need
absolutely.
We need to have that opportunity for the church to take seriously the reality that there are there have been and continue to be sexual sins within the church,
mm-hmm.
and we need to address those in a healthy way, rather than saying the institution is more important than this,
yeah.
so we're going
right.
to handle this internally, or we're going to, you know,
yeah.
we need to have an open process to say, yeah, this is what this is about, and this is how we're addressing
yeah.
this, and this is how we're going to move
mm-hmm.
forward as
mm-hmm.
a community.
Yeah.
I think that's really valuable. I think, Katie, what you brought up, that we have to have that self-awareness as individuals and as churches that we are guilty of hypocrisy,
mm-hmm.
And we have to be willing to say, not that that's okay, but we have to be willing to say, yeah, I know,
mm-hmm.
and I struggle with that, and we want to be better about that. That can't be where the conversation stops for us, right?
Right.
When we're talking to people who are not religious, or I don't even want to say not religious, when we're talking to people who are not attending church, and they say to us, I don't come because churches are just filled with hypocrites, we've got to be willing to say, you're right,
mm-hmm.
but that's not what it's about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's the step
mm-hmm.
That maybe the church hasn't done a good job is
yeah.
in saying, but that's not the point. Like,
mm-hmm.
that should not end the argument for you.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like me saying, well, I like this restaurant, but they don't serve chicken fingers. And, you know, you can say, well, you're right, but there's lots of other things that they do, like, you're right, they don't have chicken
right.
fingers, but they do, like, that should not
sure.
be the reason that you don't
right.
go to this restaurant.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, too, like, we're just not doing as good a job of proclaiming to our culture and the world what it means to live in good news. I mean, that's
right.
really what gospel is, good news.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think for the church historically, we've just assumed that the Christian faith, especially in America, is kind of the default. So you're allowed
yeah.
to call people out for their sins or their missteps culturally. Because you're assuming they know the good news of Jesus Christ. And mm-hmm. now this is a correction is what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And now we have more and more people who's like, I don't have anything to do with Jesus. And from the church, all I hear is how I'm a sinner and wrong and how I am going to hell or mm-hmm. I'm not good enough mm-hmm. to be a part of their faith community. Mm-hmm. And that's not good news. I mean, that's not like, oh, man, tell me more. Like, I would never be interested in any worldview that's doing that to me. And so we need to do a better job of proclaiming good news to people. Mm-hmm. And there's places in our world and in our area that we can bring good news into. You know, good news you are loved, good news that you are valuable. Mm-hmm. These things can be part of the church's ethos, their message. But I think we're somehow they became on the back burner. And mm-hmm. the front burner is we need to call people out for their sins, mm-hmm. our perceived sins.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm thinking that too. I think this is a piece of a cultural shift that's happening in the United States where, you know, 50 years ago, by and large, if you drove around almost anywhere in the United States, the perception was the majority of people that you were seeing were church-going Christians.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mm-hmm. And that's not the case anymore. Right. I mean, the culture of the United States has shifted mm-hmm. in such a way that you can't just assume everyone around you shares some version of your faith, right? Mm-hmm. The argument is not, are you Methodist or Lutheran or Catholic? The argument is, are you church-going at all? Are you another faith? Are you a non-faith? Or, you know, what is that anything? And I think that the church at large has not kept up with the reality that the culture around us has shifted to the point where we can't just assume everybody knows the story.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
We have to. Mm-hmm. It would be better for us to assume no one knows anything about our story than to assume Absolutely. Everybody knows
right.
our story.
Yeah.
All right, so let's take a look at one of these others. We'll take a look at it's our one day as a family.
Oh yeah,
because I think that is a very reasonable mm-hmm. thing that people say and. Maybe when we take a look at these reasons why people give for not coming to church, we should say they're good reasons. Like, they're not bad reasons.
Right.
It's not like that we want to just diminish those reasons. I think they're valid.
Yes.
But how can we address this idea? It's our one day as a family. So I have some thoughts.
Yeah.
If you guys
lead it off.
Go ahead.
I think one of the ways we can address this is they say it's our one day as a family, and they walk through the doors of most American congregations, and we separate them as a family.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They go to their individual classes to learn, their individual places that they're going to go spend time in, and maybe they come together to sit in worship, or maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so like we maybe don't do a very good job, most churches, maybe including our own, of saying, what can we do if this is your one day as a family? How can we keep you together as a family?
How can we celebrate that family?
Yeah.
I think that's a really good point. Mm-hmm. And we don't do that well at all. But at the same time, I wonder how many people want that opportunity. I mean,
sure.
because we hear from people as well, like, I want to come to church and I send my kids to Sunday school so that I can center myself and focus myself away from that connection. Mm-hmm. And so,
sure.
And I don't know, we get kind of both sides mm-hmm. of that coin.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
mm-hmm.
we're trying to feed all people and be all things
right.
to all people. And that's a game that's never going to work,
right.
ultimately,
sure.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think this comes from maybe like the church itself is relying on things we did 50 to 60 years ago to carry the day today.
Yeah,
and
sure.
we're expecting people to come in who are already either unchurched, de-churched, or low-churched and just jump on board with programming styles that existed in a different culture
right.
and a different world and saying mm-hmm. like, hey, we did this 70 years ago and everybody mm-hmm. loved it. What's wrong now? Mm-hmm. What's wrong with you? And sometimes I think it takes hard look at oneself to say like, well, how are we meeting the needs of our individual communities and congregations mm-hmm. instead of how are we making a cookie cutter experience that no matter what community you're in, you can know what church looks like.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, alongside of that, I think that we struggle with feeding the people who are already in the building
yeah.
and wanting people who are not in the building to come and join.
Yeah.
You know, there's this reality of if you have a structure in place, be it Sunday school, be it worship, whatever that might be. You have a structure in place. If people aren't coming to that for whatever reason, then that structure is not going to be what attracts people,
mm-hmm. right?
Right. And so doing the same thing, quote unquote, better is not what's going to get somebody in the door necessarily. It's going to take a shift into something completely new, giving birth to a new opportunity to experience the life of Christ in that way, that might actually bring somebody who is not familiar with this in. But that's going to be very painful for the people who are here already, who say, I'm fed by this structure. I'm fed by my kids going to Sunday school. I'm fed by getting to come in and listen to somebody drone on and then give them my money, as you described so eloquently earlier, right? That feeds me. Great.
I like the droning.
Right. It's melodic and I can fall asleep. But
it's
wait,
like
no, that's
white noise. Yeah.
And so a piece of this is that individual congregations, when we're thinking about, well, you know, if this is their one day as a family, individual congregations need to say, who are we here for? Mm-hmm. Are we here for ourselves? Are we here for the people who are already in our building?
Yeah.
Or are we going to be here for people who are not here, which requires everyone in the building to become an evangelist for that congregation, right, such that they no longer care about their own needs and are more concerned about the needs of the people who are not there and meeting them so that they can know this joy of meeting Jesus.
Right.
And that is a hard shift for us to make.
Sure, because I'm sure people who are listening to this or people in meetings can say, like, well, we could do all that.
Right.
And then nobody would still come.
Right.
And so then we're not meeting the needs of either. That could be a criticism there.
Sure.
And I've been in meetings here in our own church where I've heard people say, like, well, what if we just decided we're big enough? Like, we don't want to grow anymore as a congregation. And I've challenged that a lot, you know, to some congregation members to say, like, that's not the mission and glory of Jesus in this world. That's not the, you know, Jesus does not give us this mission of, like, grow to a comfortable size and then just stay where you are. Yeah. Like, that's just not how any part of faith works.
Right. Yeah.
And so that idea that more self-focused, the more self-focused the church is, I think the worse it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because we're going to be trying to gather in all our toys and hold them in our hands, and things are just going to slip through the cracks, and eventually you'll have nothing left. And so you have to be more and more willing to risk as a congregation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's scary, because maybe a lot of churches, I think, say, I don't really know how to risk.
Yeah.
We've been doing this for a long time, and it worked well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why should we change now? And that's hard to look at yourself in the mirror and say, maybe we missed opportunities.
Yeah.
We didn't change when we should have. We didn't pivot when we needed to pivot.
Right.
And now's the time to try something new.
I mean, think about a couple who's been married for 20 years and suddenly realizes they're not happy and what they've been doing isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you've been in that spot, you know, to stay in that marriage, to stay invested in that requires rethinking everything about who you are and who your partner is, going through intense therapy. It can be painful. It can be, you know, drudging up old wounds. It can be having to talk through all of that to get back to this place of, we can live differently now, and it will be, we have to put that trust in, it will be better in the future, but this is going to be awful in the present.
Absolutely.
Sure. Absolutely. All right, let's take a look at another one.
Okay.
Are we good there? Do you have any others?
Sure. I mean,
family. Yeah.
Family.
I think these
did we actually address family? I mean, we talked a lot, but did we address, like, family?
I think what we're saying is acknowledging that families are busy, so how can we meet them where they are instead of asking?
And that's going to take shifts on our part. Yeah.
And I do think, to that, one more thing, that providing other opportunities besides Sunday mornings for families to be together and to grow together at church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, this is one where I do struggle with how much does the church want to shift and change.
Ooh,
because at some point, a family has to say, this is what's going to be important to us.
Right.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I cannot, as a pastor, tell you what's going to be important to your family.
Right.
You know, if your family wants faith life to be important to you and your children, you have to make a choice, and that might mean other things have to fall, right? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe your kid can't do whatever travel select thing they want to do, or or maybe you as a family, you know, can't, I don't know, do a pottery class. I don't. That's a terrible example, but you know, there are things that are going to fall to the side so that you make time, because you make time for the other things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if it's a question, if it's really just a we're too busy, you are busy by your own doing,
right?
Yeah. And that's fine, and own that choice, and realize it's not just that you're busy, it's that you have chosen priorities, and other things are more important for you, and that is okay. Mm-hmm. I will respect you to the end of days if that's the position that you take.
Right.
But just saying, well, we're busy, to me is a little bit of a cop out, because it's really, it's not just that you're busy, it's that you've made choices and other things are more important to you, and that's okay.
Yeah. Right. And so then that makes the issue for the church is, how can we present ourselves as something valuable?
Right.
You know, you want to get a return on your time.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, and when we look at next week, why people come to church or why you should come to church, you know, a big reason that people do say to come to church is for these, like, for my kids, for the moral teaching. And I think sometimes maybe those are the wrong reasons. We can take a look at that.
Yeah, we can talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Where the individual falls in.
Remind me to talk about kids and their chances to get into the NFL when we get to that point.
We write that down.
Patrick, take our notes.
Kids.
Go, scribe.
Kids, NFL. All right.
I'll look at that and be like, oh, I don't know what that means.
What am I supposed to do with that? Yes.
Let's take a look at maybe a few others here. Mm-hmm. Katie, do you want one of these that you're thinking that we should take a look at? We brainstormed community and boring.
Community.
Community, okay.
Yeah. I mean, church used to be the center of everybody's world. I mean, mm-hmm. that's where you went for everything. And now, you know, you have, if your kids play sports, you get fulfillment from people in the sports world with mm-hmm. you. Your entire world does not revolve around the people at church.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, and we have not done as good a job as the church has grown, right? So think back again, 50, 100 years, churches were small local institutions mm-hmm. by and large. You know, you went to church because it was close to where you lived, because mm-hmm. traveling was hard.
Right.
And so you didn't drive 20 minutes to find the church. You went to the church that was close to you.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
This is the Catholic process still has the idea of parishes, right? You live in a certain area, which means you go to this church. And that's the church you're expected to go to because of your geographic location.
Right.
As we've grown in our ability to travel, we now have these church choices, and we can mm-hmm. drive past 10, 15 different churches.
Mm-hmm.
I live literally 3 minutes away from Lord of Life, and I can hit 5 churches mm-hmm. You know, in the time that I drive that space. So there are churches all over the place that we can pick and choose from. And so as churches have grown in that nature of us having the ability to travel further, we've got these ones that have grown up to be what we might call mega churches or just larger congregations. And we haven't done a good job of maintaining that sense of, what does it mean for us to come into a room and be known,
mm-hmm.
because now you can come into a church and be anonymous mm-hmm. for an entire Sunday morning.
Sure.
And in some ways that might be good, but then you're mm-hmm. not getting any of that community aspect mm-hmm. that once was being offered to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some people maybe like the appeal of the, mm-hmm. You know, anonymity when they come into the church building. But I think what we offer, or we should be offering, is community. Usually when, the Bible talks about church, they don't really talk about how we see church.
No, like, they don't.
Like, it never really talks about, like, oh, yeah, this lines up really, really well with how we're doing church. Usually they're talking about how the church body comes together for encouragement, for fellowship,
mm-hmm.
for those types of things. And so if we're not doing those well in our own community, but we're saying, you know, come to this. We have a Bible study that you can sit in and listen to a guy. That's not necessarily the same aspects of community that we really, really want to foster within our congregations and within the world. Because I think people would want to come to a church that they see the lives of their neighbors changing
mm-hmm.
or the lives of their coworkers changing. Mm-hmm. That's the greatest testimony that we can give in this world, is change. And not just consistency. And I think that's what we've mm-hmm. tried to offer the world, is
we're
come to church, we're consistent. Mm-hmm. And now come to church, we're changing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that sense of community births that change.
Mm-hmm.
That because you're hopefully not just surrounded by people who look like you, think mm-hmm. like you, and live like you. But in church, you have an opportunity to bond with people that have none of those things in common mm-hmm. with you, potentially.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard.
Yeah, yeah. And we have not, you know, look at our worship format. So within the Lutheran church, right, you come into worship and you sit in a pew.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are like long benches, if you're not familiar with that. So you sit in long benches
mm-hmm.
facing forward towards a front mm-hmm. area. You're often kind of expected to be quiet before the service because people are praying and reflecting, mm-hmm. which is fine. You know, it's a great thing to do as well. Mm-hmm. But so you're not necessarily engaging in conversation with people mm-hmm. around you. Worship starts. You have a written response to certain things.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
are supposed to stand and sing at certain parts and then mm-hmm. sit at other parts and listen.
Mm-hmm.
There's one point where we shake hands with mm-hmm. people around us, what we call the passing of the peace, right? And maybe you say hello, but it's not really a time when we're like exchanging information or building deep, meaningful connections. Right, yeah. It's like, shaking hands. And then, mm-hmm. and then we move on with the service. There's no point in worship where we encourage community. Sure. Other than perhaps in the sermon saying, we hope that you're engaged in community, right?
Sure.
But there's no point in the format of our worship mm-hmm. service that says, this is what we are about. Mm-hmm. We want you to be about engaging in community mm-hmm. and connecting with those people around you, which is why it's so easy to be anonymous. Because you can come in, mm-hmm. and even if you're greeted at the door, even if you write down your name on a little visitor's card saying, I want more information, you can come in and leave and not have anybody know your name mm-hmm. and not know anybody else in that room.
Sure.
And if I, even people who attend here on a weekly basis, they can do the same thing. Mm-hmm. We have faithful people who come all the time, who are known to very few people because they come in, they go to worship, they leave, and they're mm-hmm. not embracing any aspect of community.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I definitely think. And so, but to change those aspects, especially worship is considered the big show for most churches. It's kind of what most of our resources go into.
Now in the main tent.
Sunday morning. Yep. Yeah. It's center ring, and that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And so if that's not bringing about or fostering community, encouragement, fellowship, then we're relying or hoping that they get enough there that they want to explore the other parts of the tent or the mm-hmm. parts, the mm-hmm. other smaller rings that we're investing in. So either that comes with a shift of resources. How are we shifting our resources to meet those needs, or how are we shifting our worship to bring that more into the focus? Mm-hmm. So it's not just, we hope that this is happening outside of this space, but we can't really know for sure. Mm-hmm. And but how can we bring that in? I think these are hard questions to ask for most congregations.
The one place where theologically I think worship has an opportunity is in our understanding of communion.
Yeah.
And I don't know what this looks like because I'm thinking of this right now off the top of my head.
Okay.
But I feel like if we elevated the place of that moment where quite literally communion is this moment of community with ourselves and with those who have gone before us and those who come after us with Jesus, mm-hmm. Perhaps there's something there. I don't know what that is. And maybe we'll explore that more next week when I've thought about it a little bit more and we're talking about mm-hmm. Why people should come to church.
Yeah.
But I think that's a place where the church could find some resources for that.
Yeah, I think that's a good place for, I think, most churches to take a look. I mean, mm-hmm. biblically it's called a meal. And for us now, 2,000 years later, it's a bit of bread and a thimble of wine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a meal, mm-hmm. But that also means worship looks different.
Right.
And maybe it's longer. Or maybe other things get cut for the sake of that meal,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So maybe those are good things for us to think about. All right. And so the last one we kind of identified is kind of church is just kind of boring. That it's just not meeting my needs, that I don't want to sit there for an hour in this space. And I think part of this has become, and maybe for a lot of these people who love Jesus, but not the church, kind of the rise of a more consumer driven Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I mean, you're listening to a religious podcast about Christianity.
And thank you for listening.
Yes, yeah. And we appreciate that. And so I think sometimes it's easy for us to assume or think, well, I'm listening to a podcast like this, or I'm listening to a sermon by the best speakers in America,
mm-hmm.
and I can put on the praise music by the best Christian bands mm-hmm. in the world, and that can just take the place of church. Mm-hmm. And I can do that at any time. I can do that in the comfort and safety of my own car
mm-hmm.
or on my schedule, and it's not as boring.
Because
mm-hmm. I'm listening to the best speaker, mm-hmm. and if I go to church, he's probably not, or she's not, the best speaker.
Right.
Odds are. Odds are your local congregation
does not have the best speaker in the United States or in the world.
Does not have that, yeah. I mean, maybe there's somebody who speaks to you,
mm-hmm.
but... right now, literally thousands of possibilities are at your fingertips
mm-hmm. right.
Of who you want to listen to that speaks to you. So how do we address that? Like that, this is what the reality of our world, that people can engage in church and Christianity this way. How do we, as a local congregation, try to meet those needs and say, like, this is why you should be invested and involved here in a building in your neighborhood?
Right.
Or within 30 minutes of your neighborhood, because Katie and I commute in.
Sure, yes. You do. For me, this goes back to our last issue of community, where if you're not going to say that community is valuable, and if the church is not going to demonstrate that community is valuable, then why wouldn't I just stay mm-hmm. at home and listen to the best sermons and the best mm-hmm. Worship music and do that all on my own? But you're you're doing it by yourself. Yeah. You're doing it alone. And that is also not the biblical model of what was demonstrated when it was worship. It was people coming together. You know, there's this kind of rise of what's being called house churches, where people are either connected with a larger church body or not, and they're just coming together in a home and, you know, having some sort of worship, some sort of praise music, maybe doing exactly what you're describing, Patrick, of, you know, listening to the best stuff from around the world, but having that together. I think that's closer to what biblically would have been described. But if we're not helping people see the need for meaningful faith-based community, then there's not a whole lot that we can do to convince you otherwise.
And I think the music's great that you can hear at your fingertips. I think the podcasts are great. I think all of that's wonderful. But I think it's an addition to, and it's a supplement for
But how do you convince someone who doesn't, I mean, you think that because you come to church and have come to church for a long time. You're raised in a Lutheran church. You have these meaningful experiences that you draw back on. So when you sit in that moment, and frankly, it is kind of boring, you're in your head thinking, oh, this is just like the time I did this when I was holding my grandmother's hand. And it, And so there's a meaningful connection that even in the moments of boredom, you're able to connect to something deeper. If I'm coming into this church for the first time,
I have no idea.
I got nothing. And so when I'm sitting and I'm singing Kyrie Eleison, I'm like, I don't even know what that means. And we don't do a particularly good job as church at large of explaining what we're doing piece by piece.
And
we don't do a particularly good job of that. And I don't know that explaining it would make it less boring. To be honest about that.
And I think, you know, we've seen like a response to church is boring came about in like the mid-90s of like the rise of like kind of more performance-based
like
worship.
A praise praise and worship type thing.
And I'm not saying that style of music I think is bad or wrong. In fact, I would prefer it in worship, even as a Lutheran. But that gave rise to kind of the big criticism of that is like, it's just a laser light show, fog machine.
Just a performance.
It's a show.
It's
type
a concert.
Of those things. Yeah, it's a concert. And so I think we... That was one way we tried to, or some churches tried to address this, is by being more performancey, more showy, and then that didn't really work either. That it peaked for a bit and then fell off because it was hollow. Our people saw it as hollow, because they were doing that just to not be boring, and not out of out of this idea of how is this meeting the real needs of our community and congregation. So again, praise and worship. Or even a performance, there's performance aspects of church. Those things aren't necessarily bad, but when it's just to kind of not be boring, I think that's where we're going to fall into some hardship. So I think there can be a lot of beauty in high church liturgy or low church, you know, home church, but it has to be authentic. And I think that's what really sometimes the boringness comes from, is it doesn't feel authentic. It feels repetitive. Sometimes that's a criticism of the high church, repetitive and outdated. And the criticism of the low church would be it's just a show. But authenticity needs to be behind it. And so that's harder to do. Is how are we staff, leaders, musicians, bringing authenticity into the program and saying, this is genuine for me in this moment. And that matters. But at the same time, with a high church, if you're not feeling it, you can be carried by tradition and your history. And that's a valuable thing, too. But if you don't have that tradition or history, then you're not carried by anything.
I think that's a danger and a joy of both of those, that there's an opportunity for us to experience something greater than ourselves when we're engaged in this what we call liturgy, right? These things that we do week after week after week. But there's also a constraint to that. And if we're not, even I, who, you know, as a pastor, I've been fully schooled in the process of what that means to do the liturgy every week. I can tell you why we do the confession the way we do it. I can tell you why we repeat this this way. But even for me, like some weeks, I'm just not feeling that. And some weeks, I would love to like just be able to get up and, you know, have something jazzy, something exciting, something new happening. And, you know, I think that we've fallen back on what is comfortable, which is what we know, rather than doing the hard work of investing in something authentic to both who we are and who we have been and who God is calling us to be. And so... we've remained comfortable rather than leaning into something that's uncomfortable.
And I think part of what we take a step back here to talk about this the rise of like a podcast church of like, I'm just listening to the sermon, is somewhere along the way for many churches, the sermon became the reason why you go to church.
Sure.
That's why you're there, is to hear the pastor explain something to you. That's the big part of the worship service. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I don't know if that probably was birthed out of the Protestant Reformation. Things are now in the language that you speak.
Yeah,
and
sure.
So you're finally reading the Bible in the language that you speak or interacting that, and then you need somebody to explain it to you.
Yeah.
And so that's why we needed those things. And so I think maybe we're doing ourselves a bit of a disservice of saying, like, come to church for the sermon to be the star of the worship show. And maybe we're not saying that, but we're kind of
It's the implication by how worship is designed.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the prime spot. Yeah,
look at how the timeline is budgeted out for worship, right? Yeah. I mean, you get 15 minutes roughly of an hour dedicated just to this process of preaching. Mm-hmm. No other part of the service is getting 15 minutes dedicated to it.
Sure.
Even communion, even baptisms don't take 15 minutes. Yeah. Right? I mean.
Yeah. And that's in the Lutheran church. For some churches, you're getting 40 minutes, 45 minutes dedicated to the sermon part of an hour long worship. I mean, like, it is the star of the show. And so if that's the star, and it's not done as well as what you can get at home. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, that's like, go see this movie that you know is not as good as a movie you can watch at home.
Right.
Like, I mean, like, well, why?
Right.
You know, like, that doesn't make any sense.
Go see the new Solo movie instead of staying home and watching the original Star Wars.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so I think maybe now we as the modern church have to say, like, how are we doing maybe our sermon time differently so that you want to be in the room to see that happen, that listening to it in your car does not duplicate that experience or make that even sometimes a better experience because you're not distracted as much. Mm-hmm. And so what are we doing about that? Or how can we shift from saying that is the star of the show to more different aspects like community, communion, encouragement are lifted up in a different, unique way? But that requires a lot of change on how we think church should be.
Mm-hmm. And it requires a lot of pastors, including myself, to check our pride at the door.
Sure.
Because a lot of us pride ourselves on being good preachers.
Sure.
And whether we say it out loud or not, we allow ourselves to believe that our preaching has the ability to change someone's life.
Sure.
Which is in and of itself a fallacy, right? Mm-hmm. You know, my preaching will never change someone's life. Mm-hmm. Jesus may use my words to change someone's life, but my preaching is never going to change someone's life.
Right.
And I need to constantly be checking that at the door so that I can be living into what God has called the community to live in, which might look radically different than what I think it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably rarely on the way out when people are shaking your hand and you're getting that check-in with people, are they going to say like, hey, pastor, great communion today.
Thanks for blessing that bread.
That bread was delicious. Yeah.
Like
they will tell me if the bread is not delicious.
but probably the one encouragement that you're going to hear is about the sermon. Great sermon. Love the sermon. You did a great job on the sermon. The handful of times that I've preached, that's what usually people say.
Well, that's just because you're a great preacher, Patrick.
Yeah, well, obviously. But I mean, like, they're not really coming. They don't really come to us and say like.
That confession and absolution was just beautiful.
I was
so moved to remember my own sins and experience the forgiveness of Jesus when we... Mm-hmm.
Great passing the peace.
Right. Oh, man. I've never passed the peace like that before.
Yeah, it was done so uniquely and differently, and I just loved it.
Right.
Yeah. So I think we're...
Those are not things we are hearing after worship. Yeah.
Yeah, because those are things that we let remain static, and we try to mix up how we... Our words in the sermon are what is dynamic and changing. So that maybe that gives us some things to look at as a congregation, how we can do a better job in these things.
The senior pastor here at Lord of Life likes to throw out the kind of, I don't know, aphorism, I guess is what it would be, but that no one ever leaves church humming the sermon, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure.
And so it is a reminder for us that the sermon is not what sticks with people as much as we as pastors like to think, oh man, this week I've got it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I've got the perfect analogies, the perfect image, and I've got this Greek word, and now it's going to be, no one's going to leave humming the sermon.
Sure.
You know, hopefully they are moved to remember something and the Spirit continues to work in that, but there are other aspects of worship that perhaps should be elevated more appropriately.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right.
There we go. Why people don't come to church, how the church can do a better job of addressing some of these issues and being willing to take hard looks in the mirror and also being willing to say, we want to do something different.
Yeah.
That we can't rely on what worked in the past to work today and to expect the community and the culture to change so we don't have to.
Right. Yeah.
And that's scary, but it's also, I think, exciting and challenging for us as congregations. And I think probably most churches that are leaning into that are the ones that are going to find greater success than the ones that are kind of waiting to die. Mm-hmm. But they're just like, we're clutching on our dwindling congregation and our dwindling resources as long as possible.
Right.
To survive as long as possible before it completely collapses in on itself.
Yeah.
I think those are the churches that you're not going to find as great a joy in, and also maybe not as great as challenge in. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. So I think it's time.
To be continued. Oh, wait, are we not? I thought that's what you were saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's also time.
We didn't practice that in advance.
Well, it's also time for our recommendation.
Oh, our recommendation. Yeah. Okay. Mm. No, are we doing a recommendation both weeks in both parts?
Sure, why not?
I'm just asking. Yeah, maybe we got like one giant recommendation. I've got a recommendation for
you. Okay, well, you've got a recommendation this week.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
So, hey, we were talking about cliches last week, and I talked a lot about cliches around grief and how we often find ways to say the wrong things or things that I would say are the wrong things.
Right.
And I want to recommend a book by C.S. Lewis. It is called A Grief Observed, A Grief Observed by C.S. Lewis. It is his own journey of wrestling with the death of his wife and kind of taking every cliche that you can imagine and just wrestling with it full force and pulling out why it's awful and how it's hurt him or how he sees it damaging others, coming up with ways of experiencing grief that I've never even thought of before. Mm-hmm. I've been revisiting it a little bit in my own reading this past week, and that's my recommendation. Mm-hmm. Check it out. Whether you're in grief now or you know people who are in grief or you just want to be better at existing with people in the midst of grief, A Grief Observed by C.S. Lewis. Mm-hmm. All right, so hey, if you are looking for more from Beyond Sunday, you can check out our website, beyondsundaypodcast.com, for all of our latest episodes. We're going to link to some of the information that Patrick talked about today, and we'll have more links up there as this episode continues next week with part two. And also check us out on our Instagram, beyond_Sunday, where you can occasionally see us putting up funny photos of ourselves while we're recording, or you can find our latest episodes there as well. All right, well, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week for part two of this Why Church series. Yes. Have a great afternoon.
Yes, thank you. Bye.